This is not our first foray into podcasting
together. No.
Yeah, why don't you give a little bit of context to the listeners? What is The A-President?
The A-President was this pandemic project that we had, which honestly, I don't know, like saying its name, you know, I don't want to say it two more times because it might just fucking show up. But it was what we had, I think, what, 12 or 13 episodes?
I think more. I think closer to 20.
Okay.
You know, we covered a full season, but the whole premise of the podcast was we would watch old episodes of The Apprentice.
Right.
Talk shit about them.
Because we were just watching classic television, because like we had watched everything. So we're like, let's watch the old stuff.
Well, and also we wanted to draw parallels with what we witnessed from Trump on the show.
Right.
To what was happening in the White House. And it was an election year, so it was all hands on deck.
Was full steam, and it was just, I mean, you couldn't get away from it. So we're like, okay, let's really take a deep dive into what we're talking about here.
And it included interviews with the castmates. We somehow,
yes,
got these, some of these people's trust.
We got two people on and then they caught on. But it was mostly just us bad mouthing literally every single person on that show. The contestants,
they're all complicit.
The Trump himself, the judges, the other, like George Ross and Carolyn.
Just anyone who's proximal to The Apprentice guilty. And that was kind of our thesis was, well, they're all guilty in some fashion. You know, Obviously hindsight's 20/20, but you're fair game if you helped propagate the situation in any way.
And I think that's what was disappointing about those interviews was that those guys still couldn't be like, no, fuck Trump. Like they still
some of them were. That was a fascinating
hop
part.
Off the train.
That was a fascinating part was some who were deep in the train when the show happened, completely turned to 180, and some people completely turned a blind eye. You know, they just kept, they were in his good graces.
For a lot of people, it was good business. You know, it was just good that they were attached to his brand because suddenly his brand was front and center again, even though it was remarkably destructive.
I feel like a lot of times people ideology just aligns with whoever does them the most favors.
Oh, it's a sad, thirsty world out here. And here we are in West Hollywood, California.
How much money will pay me? I'll be Republican. Fuck it.
Yeah, God. I do think that I don't know if there's a word for it, but like there's something about people when they're on camera, like folding on their ideals and their values. I mean, that's, I think the premise of like the show Nathan for You, right? Like is let's put these people on camera and then just see how far they will go.
Yeah. And Nathan for You, the rehearsal. I mean, anything Nathan Fielder does, of course.
Right.
But
I mean, Fear Factor, perfect example. You know, there's something about like even chasing that very ephemeral clout.
I think differently though, Fear Factor people know what they're getting into. The show is Fear Factor. They know they're going to eat bugs and play with heights. Nathan for You, these poor people, not even poor because my opinion, I mean, they got all the advertising that they could. They got millions of dollars of advertising.
Oh yeah, yeah. Those businesses are certainly doing better now.
That they were featured, even if the idea, which most of the time it didn't pan out. Sometimes they did. But most, 9 times out of 10, you know, okay, this was a ridiculous idea, but the advertising you get from it being featured on Comedy Central, other platforms, it's like, that's going to offset whatever disappointing idea this really dry comedian had.
Yeah, I don't know if any of them seriously thought, they're like, oh, this guy's going to make us rich. Like he's going to turn this business around.
I think
with this shit-flavored yogurt.
He worked with a lot of immigrant business owners, and I think the immigrant business owners, a lot of them were like really on board with this because they're like, yes, this is bold. This is how you make it in America.
The cab driver was
Andy's cab.
Andy the cab driver. Man, Andy was the worst.
Bless him. I think he was out in OC. Right, they were also in California, so I love that. You know, I'm like Pink's hot dogs right down the street.
Right.
They were institution well before that, but they're still roaring. You know?
Yeah, they were never hurting for the business.
No, they didn't need
to. To them, I think it was like, oh, it'll be fun to get on TV. You know?
Yeah, they got a fun brand for that. They love. I don't know. Those people are savvy.
They also made the executive decision to be like, okay, that's enough. That's
yeah, they literally escorted him out.
Oh, man.
Which shows their savviness. They were like, look, we already have a successful business. We don't need you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he proposed to them to do physical harm to you know, the
his just like following people home.
His business idea was that you could cut the line at Pink's if you had one of a handful of excuses. Doctor's appointment, blah, blah. You know, one of them was you were in air traffic control and you were late for work. But he found one guy who said he had a doctor's appointment. He seemed sketchy. He stayed in
Jonathan.
Ate. It was his name. He stayed and he ate at Pink's and then went to a movie. He followed him to a movie afterwards. And so then...
Which it could have been any of us. Like, I might do that. It's like, oh, sorry, I got to cut in line. I gotta go do a thing.
Well, then you would deserve to, you know, for whatever happened to him to have... He proposed that he was going to take him out to sea under the ruse that he'd won some prize and then sink the boat.
Had a team of strangers just judge him openly.
Yeah.
And those people did not hold back.
They didn't go for the sinking of the boat, though. They deemed that was too severe, so...
I agree with that, too. Yeah.
That was when the Pink's people bowed out.
They're like, all right, you can't kill the customers, Nathan. Yeah. I understand. But yeah, our podcast, man, I mean, it's as soon as effectively, you know, when the election ended and Joe Biden won, we kind of just made the executive decision to be like, okay, maybe we should wrap this up. But literally the very next day, the episodes that we were using for the clips were all taken off of Tubi.
They were being streamed on Tubi.
Right.
Yeah, and that was the first time we ever heard of Tubi.
Yeah.
We're like, it's the platform that has The Apprentice on it. We even plugged them up top on the show because we're like, if y'all want to watch with us.
Tubi, if you're listening, you're a team of ingrates. And you should be so lucky to be mentioned on another podcast, even though we just did it just now.
And did many times on The President. But what was, because the day after the election, all the Apprentice episodes were taken off. So yeah. Tubi clearly had a contract with them to say, like who knows what would happen if Trump won? They probably would have stayed on.
Probably would have stayed on. That's pretty gross too. If you think about it, it's like, all right.
You have an election clause in your streaming contract.
Ugh.
You have an ideology clause. You know, a voting. That's just so. What other show is like contingent on if this person gets elected? You know, maybe more than we think, but I guess
24 maybe. I feel like. You know, is any show where they're just killing Arabs?
If Al Gore were president, we would have never had 24.
We would have never had 24.
That's my hot take of the day.
Man, I got to give points to 24, though. For all of the weird, hateful shit that was on that show, first black president on TV, I think, right? There wasn't one before that.
Yeah, they had to, you know, they had to give you a little bit of the carrot if they were going to give you the stick.
Right. The guy from the Allstate commercials. Yeah. You know, with his majestic
Dennis
voice.
Dennis Haysbert. Great actor. And, Was that the first black president? I feel like black presidents and black people playing God has been like a very prevalent thing for probably a few decades.
President, I think that might have been the first. Can we look this up?
Okay, who has been portrayed? Who has been the first black president?
First black president on TV, on American television, and I'm willing to bet it's 24.
On television, on TV,
and I'm pretty sure a part of that was. So it made it more palatable for the audience for Jack Bauer to disobey him. You know what I mean? It's like, if Jack Bauer...
What a theory. He's going rogue. It's like, you're damn right he is. Get him, Jack.
I think Obama would have won more reds over if the black president on 24 was more agreeable.
Okay. All right. Man, you really got to scroll for these examples. All right. Well... Okay, on TV, because I guess there was that movie, Deep Impact.
Morgan Freeman was president on Deep Impact.
Right. 1987 animated series, Spiral Zone.
Animated.
Okay.
Let me guess, the voice actor was a white guy.
Okay, in 1977, Richard Pryor portrayed the first black president on a skit on the Richard Pryor Show.
Got it, okay.
That's obviously a skit about...
But it's a comedy. It's the point is that the president...
It's satire.
I mean, if you want to, you know, go there, then Dave Chappelle was, like, Black Bush, right? Like, that was the thing. But I think 24 was already on then.
I don't even want to hear this song, because... In 1941, there's a musical movie, Babes on Broadway. Judy Garland, in black male drag, sang a song, Franklin Delano Jones, about the first black president of the United States. I think I've seen her in like this kind of clown drag makeup. I don't know if that was like what this was.
Oh, I'm sure it was grotesque. I'm sure it was.
I don't want to know the lyrics. Very of this poor song. Taste. I yeah. don't. And maybe back then it was like made to be in good taste.
That was back when you didn't need a pass. You know, you really just could insult minorities and nobody said shit because there was no getting canceled for that.
If you didn't say anything that wasn't an outright insult, it was progressive.
You couldn't say anything that was communist. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. And you couldn't say, I don't know, you couldn't say stuff like, you couldn't say the N-word, you know what I mean? But short of that, I feel like those people got away with quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so 24 was the first series. All right.
Chris Tucker planned on writing and starring a movie about, that's once again, that's a movie. That was in 2000. Chris Rock, you know, he was head of state. That was 2000.
Right.
Man, you might be right.
Which is disappointing because it's a pretty recent show. Like 24 is what, maybe 20 years old?
Yeah, man. Okay, actor Dennis played a black press, said the portrayal may have opened the eyes and the minds. So that was definitely, whether it was like the first or not, it was the most real representation of that. Like, I mean, we could have a black president.
Right.
Because we have a black president literally fighting terrorists.
Yeah, but nobody was telling him that he was born in Kenya. You know, nobody was calling him the Antichrist.
He was like, pretty straightforward. Yeah. It was just like Black Bush, pretty much.
It was Black Bush. That's what they were going for. Actual, well, I mean, classier than Bush.
Yeah. Know. Dennis Hayes, I mean, like, his presidents definitely seem more well-rounded in a lot of ways than Bush. But right. he was like Clinton. He was just a prototypical president.
Right. Down the middle of the road.
Yeah.
You know, just
which Obama was middle of the road as
Obama
they come
too. Obama was pretty middle of the road.
He's as mainstream, and yet, you know, all the birther conspiracies. It's like, man, could we?
Well, they didn't want to listen to a black guy. That's what it was. They couldn't wait to tell you why his policies were wrong. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, they weren't radical ideas. You know what I'm saying?
Hardly.
He just said,
"Let's bail out the
change.
Banks." Like most of America was like, "Yeah, please,
let's
bail out
do
the
it."
Banks.
Yeah. Republicans really didn't know what to do.
Yeah, like fuck. He's saying all of the stuff we were going
to
say.
We want that to happen, but he's still the black guy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What Man. A happy time in history before things got really
It's funny because this whole time we, you know, like growing up, we were like, when are we going to have our first black president? When are we going to have the first black president that isn't like immediately undermined with conspiracy theories about his origins?
Yeesh. I mean, I feel like I was surrounded by all of these predictions about how the world will fall apart if society progresses from people like on the right side. Like, I remember being in college and going to a talk between this guy that was like a writer for High Times and a former cop. And they were like touring colleges and that was like their show. They basically had like a debate and they would have people ask questions, right? And the cop was like, if weed became legal, society will fall apart. And people clapped. Like,
where was this?
This was in Washington, Eastern Washington. Washington
was this when
State.
you were in college?
When I was in college.
So early 2010s.
I was very high. And I still remember it vividly. And I just remember thinking, I was like, this is such a gross exaggeration. Like, I don't think weed has the kind of impact on a single person's life that this guy does. Mm-hmm. But like his projection was that like society would crumble. Mm-hmm. Like he's like, oh, banks would shut down, you know, there nobody would do any work, like everything would just fucking stop and like nothing would ever be good anymore. And it's like,
I mean, that happened, but it wasn't because
weed
was legal.
The weed, like,
society just fell apart for other reasons.
Yeah. No, it's nice for a cop to just shift the blame on weed, you know?
Yeah.
Clearly, the cops clearly had nothing to do with it.
Man, I remember 420, my senior year of high school, and that was the first time I'd ever really smoked. Like, the first time in my life was my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And we had a test, a science test on 420 about, like, the heart, chambers of the heart and, you know, anatomy and all that. And I woked and boked that morning, waked and baked.
Woked and boked? God, did you think of that while you were boking?
Pretty much. But what is the past tense for wake and bake? Write in the comments.
Waked and baked.
Waked and baked. That's too much. It's,
yeah, it's not as much fun to say. Woked and
woked
boked.
And boked. I woked and boked that morning, and I hadn't studied for the test. And then my friend was driving me to school afterwards, and I just looked at the heart, and all of a sudden, I got it. And so then I aced that test, but then after that test,
Wow, you're like that Method Man movie where their good dead friend helps them in the test.
Yeah, I feel like that was like more of an exception to the rule. The 420 fairies just blessed me that day. But they did not bless me when our science teacher, knowing, you know, I went to a school called Westwood, and the nickname in the district for it was West Weed. So that was the reputation.
Austin, Texas.
Texas. And then my teacher then played this anti-drug video of like Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Yakov Smirnov talking about like how people they know died because they tried weed. I was still impressionable. So I was like, this is a little scary, guys. And all my friends who were way more experienced were just like laughing at it.
I mean, now like basically everyone I know has tried weed. You know, I'd be hard pressed to find somebody that's like, I've never smoked weed. Like there's maybe like a couple of sober comics just on principle that are like off of everything. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know anybody that never tried it once, didn't inhale, you know, that didn't. And if I meet that kind of person, I'm like, in a weird way, I'm like less likely to trust them. and I hate to be that guy, but like, I don't know. It's like, why is this? Cause I don't know.
I mean, maybe I would, I do trust them, but it's like, there's a lack of not like an empathetic point of view just because I have. So I'm like, Not that you're not on my level, but like I maybe understand the values of someone who's tried it a little bit more. Right. And your values are probably more stringent. You probably have better values, but that's what's hard to trust is that you maybe are that much more pure. I
think better values is
can be subjective.
Yeah, but definitely you're less fucking fun to be around.
I guess not always. You know, that's a broad brush, but
I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like our community is filled with some pretty interesting, fun people. And weed is a very big part of just, I don't know, like any comedy scene,
it's
really.
It's integral to the comedy zeitgeist. But there's always a lot of comedians that still don't smoke.
There's a lot of comedians that don't smoke. Yeah. Well,
there are a lot that are totally sober.
I haven't smoked for weeks now. Mm-hmm. You know, just I'm taking a bit of a tolerance break. And I can tell you, people that don't smoke are angrier. What's 1,000%? They have, I think they're probably a little more
like
agitated.
Do you feel more on edge?
A little more. But I'm also like coming down, right? That's the thing. Like it's, you know, it's one of those things where like it's in your bloodstream for like 30 days or whatever. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it shows up in like a urine test, you know.
Right. So it's still in your body. So like, I mean, if you do say that, like, you know how if you do Molly or whatever, like the next 4 days or you're just, you know, your body's still kind of replenishing. Mm-hmm. And like knowing like how to like function properly, like I think that same thing happens with weed, but it's over a much longer period of time. So that like edginess and irritableness, like it is a very mild withdrawal in some senses. But even that, like after about 2 days, you're like, all right, well, whatever.
I've been taking weed breaks a lot more frequently, which is good.
I think as you get older, it's just
generally
there's
you
less
know,
time to be high.
That's a big part.
There's
of it.
There's just more you need to be that, doing while
that,
you're sober.
And there's just more you want to accomplish, you know. And it's not that you wouldn't work or do these things while you were high, but why put myself through that at that point?
Right.
You know, like am I accomplishing anything? No. Would I be a little bit sharper if I wasn't? Yes. So then why not just choose that version of my
I do think there are a lot of people that are probably higher functioning with weed because it has medicinal properties, but I think an overbearing majority are not. And they use those examples as like...
Yeah, they're always the poster children
exactly,
of weed
for
productivity.
Like, see? You know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, that guy can do it because he's a genius. You're the manager of a Papa John's. Like, I mean, you probably can't
you
be
you smoking
high.
On your lunch break is not doing any favors.
Exactly. You're fucking up the numbers in your inventory because you're not as smart as Steve Jobs. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He gets a pass.
Yeah. I think you have to be good without it before. It's one of those things where like it you haven't really earned it earned being high all the time until you can prove that you can be exceptional without being high all the time.
That's true.
And that's the part of it is a lot of people I think that insist on being high all the time are just high all the time and they're like, look, I'm good, but it's like, but you don't really know because you haven't really done the thing where you're not high constantly since you were like 16. So, I mean, you don't really know.
I think when I was younger and like in my 20s and I was taking breaks, I would feel that maybe I was just angstier. I think that might be part of it. But I would feel the irritability more. But now if I do, I'm very even keel. Like I still feel like I feel pretty much the same now.
And honestly, weed now has like almost the opposite effect on me a lot of the times. Like I have to... like, if I'm smoking weed, it has to be under very controlled circumstances. Like, I can't have any responsibilities, because the bearing of those responsibilities becomes like a source of anxiety for me. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'm stoned only multiplies it. Like, I think it used to make me relaxed in a way that it doesn't anymore.
That's so con- I hear you that know? All the time, that all of a sudden people got more paranoid and yeah. people who are like lifelong smokers. And
absolutely.
I think when you're younger, you're like, huh, sucker. And now you're like, I get it.
Well, because I used to go to, I mean, when I was in college, we'd go to class stoned all the time. But like working, if I'm like, even if, I don't know, like if I had a long night and I'm like kind of like, you know, maybe didn't get a lot of sleep and like maybe I'm still like a little bit stoned, like, and I'm working in the morning, it's like, I'm incredibly uncomfortable. Like, it is such, like, I can't smoke before I have to be present in the moment to be doing anything, where I feel like it used to be like I couldn't even achieve that presence of mind unless I was a little bit stoned, because it calmed me down. But now it's more and more is having this weird opposite effect, where unless I'm literally like planning on just lounging or like going to a concert or like, you know, like seeing a movie, like something that where I'm not actively making decisions and choices, mm-hmm. then literally every decision and choice becomes like just this incredible source of just
angst.
Just stress, man.
Yeah. And you feel like you see all these ripple effects. Like, if I choose this, that, you know, this decision is adjacent to this action, yeah. you know, and then this stuff might happen.
It's like the spice melange, but all the future you see is incredibly inaccurate.
Can you please break down that reference for me?
Yes. If anybody is familiar with Dune, it's...
Okay. Well, I guess I saw Dune.
You saw Dune.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the spice that they're harvesting uh-huh. on the planet...
Their catnip.
Well,
it's like, it is human catnip, I felt. It's more than that.
It in some people that have a genetic predisposition, it gives them the power of prescience.
Right, right.
And they're able to see the future.
Right.
And that's basically the main
use
of it.
Catnip.
Like, well, yes,
catnip. I swear, some cats can see the future if they've had enough catnip.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if cats could like read minds and like just
oh, who's
like,
to say they don't?
Become, well, there is, I mean, ugh, God, I hate that I'm quoting Joe Rogan right now, but there is a theory that like early men gained
the stone
consciousness
date theory.
Through
mushrooms.
They consumed like psychedelic substances, and I think that's where Frank Herbert probably got the idea for this, the, you know, like the nature of spice itself, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a fact. Hey, read the series.
So your decision making felt like you were taking spice.
It felt like I was taking like spice,
too much spice,
laced with Adderall,
laced
and,
with
and it's something that makes me hear my father's judgment.
Laced with salvia.
Head. Yeah, it it's starting to become.
How was that ever legal, by the way? Can we just take a moment to talk about salvia and Four Loko real quick?
Jesus, the 20 teens were a wild west for like just chemicals,
substances,
just weird FDA approvals, just fucking getting through the door. I think OxyContin
thanks, Obama.
Was probably thanks. Whose side are we on?
Yeah. Yeah, but the FDA was having a field day with like experimental.
I remember
alcohol.
My buddy Levi in high school. This was in college. He was on probation, so he couldn't test positive for weed. So he would just smoke salvia all the time. And literally, I mean, I smoked it one time.
And he'd be like, it's legal, bro, you know?
I mean, well, they weren't.
So it can't be worse.
They weren't checking him for it. That was the thing. Like, and I was just like, bro, like, how is this fun for you? Like,
and there was K2, and K2 actually led to deaths.
Right.
It was like, you know, people had a reaction to it, like it was bath salts.
And I think Kratom is still legal, right? Or Kratom?
Kratom kind of sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I still see signs for it. Like I was in Kentucky last summer, and weed was illegal there, but like they had something called Delta 8. Do you know what this is?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like shitty weed. That's they
my
gave
parents,
a fancy
my parents name. Tried Delta 8. They said it got them higher than weed.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, yeah. And they're no strangers to weed.
They're not.
No. So not since they retired.
I'm curious. Yeah, that is bizarre, because Delta 8 was like CBD. Like.
I think sometimes too, if it's a newer substance and you try it, you know, your first time, it's gonna have. So maybe if they tried Delta 8, they'd have a tolerance. deterrence to it that, you know, would kind of lessen the impact.
But. I'm not an expert, but there may be some properties that maybe like activates chemicals in your brain that like weed doesn't. So in that way, like maybe you'd feel a little higher, right. But I just remember smoking it and I was like, this is terrible. This is awful. We might as well not even have done. Now my throat hurts and I'm not even a little bit stoned. Yeah. Disappointing. But I guess this is what adulthood feels like. I mean, just, the pandemic just kind of felt like a weed fest, really. Like, just so much time.
It was for a while. It was an introspection fest. It was a pivot fest.
It was a pivot fest. Yeah, it was a
global pivot fest.
Necessary things. It is weird now, like, if I don't have children, but it would be, I think, interesting if I had a son and he was like, Dad, I want to smoke weed with you, like... I mean,
how old would he be in this?
What
scenario?
Am I gonna say? Well,
that's a big part of it.
That's a big part of it. I think it depends on each person, right?
My 12-year-old came up to me. I might have a problem. Well, my 21-year-old.
12
son,
is, I think, a pretty hard. You know.
I mean, okay. I'm exaggerating.
But there were definitely kids I knew that, like, when we were like 17 or 18, that were very responsible weed users. Mm-hmm. In a way that I wasn't. You know, I felt like I was like grossly irresponsible with it, but. That's because they had the sort of maturity to know, like, okay, I have homework, so I probably shouldn't smoke and, like, play video games.
There were those kids.
Yeah.
They're doing pretty well now.
They're doing fine. But, like, I don't know. I smoked as much as I wanted. I feel like I'm doing fine, too.
Yeah. Well, things, you know, and everyone's okay. Body reacts. Weed, I think, is one of the only things where everyone's body reacts to it differently.
Right. Well, what was disappointing was, like, I knew this guy. He was a really good friend of mine in high school, and we kind of had, like, a bit of a falling out after I went to college.
What happened?
Is
this the story?
He just became, like, an incel, kind of.
Like, pre-incel.
Like, I left him in Boise, and I came back, and he had all these fucking crazy
things. He got red-pilled?
He got red-pilled hard.
Was this even before red pill?
This was before we had a word for red-pilling, and he had gotten... He was on 4chan, and he had gotten red-pilled.
Yeah.
And he
took the first red pill.
He was so... He took that pill, but he wouldn't smoke weed. Like, he thought weed made you such a piece of shit.
Like, it sounds like other people we know. Not with weed, but, like, other
with
habits.
Other habits, yeah. Right? Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you do this, you're weak. I'm like, well, I don't see you crushing it.
Yeah, it's like, by every metric, I'm outperforming you. And it's like...
I should do more weed. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we know people. We don't want to name names. We know people that think masturbation makes you a bad person, which is a sad way to live, if you ask me. Because I don't think he's with somebody either. So this is just a guy that just doesn't...
We should check in on
relieve himself.
Wait, you should check in on your Boise friend. So wait, you were, I think, about to tell a story of, like, or, like, you left him a summer, he came back.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, I left home for college. And then, you know, like, we would see each other during breaks or whatever. But then I graduated and I moved home for a few months before I moved to Portland. And in that time, like, that's kind of when our friendship started to, like, drift apart. And, like, I realized, like, some very, like vivid changes in him and his attitudes and his opinions. And the weed was just scratching the surface. Like, he had all these, like, backward views on
women. It was like a symptom to the disease. Like, right, the symptom is you now have this view.
He just had all this toxic shit going on. You know what I mean? And he dropped out. He didn't finish school. And he was literally the working at a Papa Murphy's. And, like, he had the audacity to be, like, judging my choices. It's like, dog, like...
Woo.
I'm sorry. Like, I know you shouldn't compare yourself to people, but it's like,
if your choice as it relates to weed specifically, or
he thought that I was trying to do stand up was incredibly stupid.
Oh my god, what an asshole! Just, like, clipping wings.
Yeah, but he had, like, nothing going for him. Like, he was just like working on a truck. You know what I'm saying? Like, lamenting over his incredibly toxic relationship with his girlfriend. Like, his hobbies were very limited and accessible, and he wasn't really, like, reaching for anything, and everything I did to him was stupid, including weed.
What a jerk.
It's a good reason that we're not friends anymore, I guess. Yeah. But, like, it was just one of those things. Like, it was my dad ran into him at a wedding, like, I mean, maybe 6 or 7 months ago. Like, they were,
really?
He, like,
recently?
Recently.
Oh boy, I would love to get an
I
update.
Would love to hear. Because since then, you know, I think I've made a couple of pretty significant and public leaps.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, in that way, like, oh, like, is weed still bad for me, bro? Like, I loved
it. Well, did your dad report on how he's doing?
No, they didn't talk long, but, I mean, he recognized him. He's like, oh, yeah, I ran into your friend. I don't want to say his name, but I ran into your friend.
Our producer will bleep it out. It's
and
fine.
He said hi. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I didn't press him further because I don't really give a shit.
Your dad's like, so are you still a fucking loser? You still tell my son his dreams are stupid?
I don't think my dad knew all that about him. But my dad was just like, oh, yeah, it's been a while since we've seen him around. And I was like, yeah, like, I guess it has, huh?
If only he knew.
I mean, my dad didn't know all that, but it was just bizarre. Like, I don't know. We were also in our like early 20s. Like, I get it. You know what I mean? I'm sure he's a lot different now. Like, yeah. I'm a lot different now, you know? And I'm sure I was...
He's moved on to 8chan.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Q guy now.
I was about to say, man, he could either have like come back to the light or he was at the Capitol.
He was going that way. But I have a striking feeling he's basically doing the same shit. He's probably just working some shitty job and complaining. Like, he was just a negative guy.
And was he always like that?
Not so much in high school. He was more fun to be around in high school.
Was always there, and then
I think it was always there. But I think I was a more negative guy. You know, I think I was a bigger asshole.
Think his influence had anything to do with that?
Maybe. I think that's why we became friends. I think we just had this sort of salty
mutual
outlook.
Negativity.
But like I
you and, salty through, motherfucker.
Through
I have the easiest time imagining this.
Yeah, man. It's because, I mean, I don't know. Like, you've seen me at bottom, I think. Like, I think we've caught each other at each other's bottoms.
Of our bottoms,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, a version of our bottoms. But I think through, like, you grow through life experiences. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? And those 4 years where, you know, in college, I dealt with a lot of shit. You know what I mean? Like, just in my personal life, I feel like I became wiser through the challenges and letdowns that life inevitably brings you when you want things that you don't have immediately in front of you. Mm-hmm. And he was fine sitting where he was and judging others from the top of his anthill. You know what I mean? Like, and that kind of thing.
The anthill that is Papa Murphy's.
Papa Murphy's. It's a hill made
of dough. What location?
It was, I think, the Cole Road location.
Oh,
on
well, fuck me. I mean,
oh, no, it was the State Street location.
Oh, never mind.
And I never ate their pizza.
That'll show them.
Yeah.
Hear that, Papa Murphy's?
Now he's at a Little Caesars. Ha, ha, ha.
That'd be funny if he just stayed in the pizza game.
Right. But I do think what's changed in me is, even in, like, my mid to late 20s, like, every once in a while, I would check on him just to, like, be like, haha, you suck. You know what I mean? Like, in my own head. And now, like, it's less of that. And I'm, like, sincerely hoping, like, dude, I hope you, like, got it together. You know what I mean? I think that's, again, that's a part of getting older.
So right? You would check in to be quote-unquote friendly, but underneath the surface, you kind of wanted to see him squirm?
Yeah, I would. There were a handful of people where, because, I mean, things weren't going well, you know? Like, I was working...
For you?
And for me, yeah, I was fighting for spots in Portland, right? Like, this is when I was still early in stand-up, and I was bombing every single night.
But enough,
like,
successes to want to rub it in his face.
Right, but I was doing better than being a fucking Papa Murphy's employee.
I'd rather be a shitty comedian than a really good...
No, because I was using my degree, you know, I was working a job where, you know, I felt like I was on a road that he could not even find. But I was still, like, I had so much self-loathing that I think I needed to, like, make sure that he still sucks in a way that I don't anymore. Like, and now it's like...
I would love to read the subtext of your messages to him. Like, hey, man, what's up? How's Papa Murphy's?
There are a couple of people, like, that, you know, like, the guy that got me started on, started doing stand-up, he kind of fell off the map. And I think maybe, like, the last time we had contact, I kind of to rub it in his face, but also just to, you know, see if he wanted to celebrate with me, I got an opening weekend with Dwight Slade, me and him... worshipped this documentary about Bill Hicks called American, and Dwight Slade and him were really good friends. You know, they came up and stand up together, and we'd always respected his work when we were, like, running, you know, those early days where you take any spot you get, you know, you're bombing for three people at a fucking Daylit library. Like, And you know, I was like, man, Dwight Slade, like, he's so funny. And I got an opening weekend with him in Portland at the club that doesn't exist anymore. But
which club?
It was Harvey's. Okay. Which is, you know,
I wasn't familiar with Harvey's.
It wasn't a great club, but they had some pretty cool acts come through. And Dwight Slade was like my like fourth or fifth hosting weekend. And I like texted him to be like, hey, man, like, I'm opening for Dwight Slade this weekend. And then on Sunday, I was like, dude, like, he just shook my hand and told me, you know, like, I just have to keep
so,
working.
So
like,
you sent that message, no response.
No
and
response.
And then the day after, you followed up.
No, like two or 3 days later.
Okay, gotcha. But a few days
later. No response. And then just before the pandemic, it was February of 2020, mm-hmm. I went back to perform in my old college town in Pullman. I just did a one-nighter, headlined, had a great set. And there was someone at the show that was a mutual friend who came to see me and was like, so guess who the fuck I ran into in Seattle? And I guess he...
Frazier?
Toss salad and scrambled eggs. we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But okay, so like apparently he was just walking down the street and like this guy notices my friend and he's like, Travis? Mm-hmm. And like Travis turns around and he's like, dude, I couldn't even recognize him. Uh-oh. He just looked like a homeless wreck. Like he clearly had lost like most of his weight, like just wasn't really terrible.
When he was like, when you see someone you haven't seen in a long time and you're like, oh my God, that person either gained a bunch of weight or lost a bunch of weight.
Right.
Very rarely he's like, he looks pretty much the same.
Destructively lost weight. Destructively. You know what I mean? And he was just like, hey man, you like want to go get a beer? And Travis was like, dude, I was so uncomfortable. Like I couldn't even fucking like... I was like, no, thanks, man.
Did he have like a little methy energy to
yeah,
him?
Yeah, that's how he had described it. And at that point, I was like, dude, like that just fucking sucks. Like I wanted him to have a better life than he had so I could rub my even better life in his face.
But
like,
now it's not
to
even
to find
fair.
Out that he's like not doing well. Like that was devastating to me. Like that brought back the fact that like we started together, dude. Like he doesn't even do comedy anymore. You know, we were gonna like chase this dream down together and like... he's not even in the game, and it's
dude,
just,
it's just the people who don't quit.
I mean, there are some people.
Well, I know what you're about to say, and I agree, I get it, but also this is also in a lot of ways a game of last man standing.
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, but yeah. It's like it shouldn't eat into the other parts of your life. You know what I mean? Like
need to have a balanced life.
You need to have a balanced life. Like I feel like in order to maintain this habit, mm-hmm. which I mean, effectively it is. Cause I mean, now,
cause it's not a career.
I've lost money doing stand up for 11 years now. You know what I mean? Like even if
a career is something you do to make money.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Even if each
it's not
year
a job,
I'm know? Improving, like I'm still in the red in terms of time spent,
gas,
and resources
else,
expended.
Resources, yeah.
But like in order to maintain it, I've had to make like live a healthy life, like find
have
other ways
job.
To make
yeah.
money, you know what I mean, like progress my professional career like outside of this vocation. Like I still take it seriously. I'm on stage 5-6 nights a week, but like it's a marathon, you know what I mean? But in order to keep pace, in order to replenish the nutrients, like I've had to like improve literally every other part of everything else I do. But for some people I feel like they do the opposite, like they squander. And they burn
down.
They
go, and they burn out.
Yeah. And I think you only really burn out if you don't maintain that balance. And this was a guy who literally let every single thing fall by the wayside. And I mean, for people like that, I'm like, take a break.
Well, marathon is very marathon's a very apt metaphor because it requires a degree of fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Self-care is a form of fitness because it keeps you going. Getting a job is a form of fitness because it gives you resources to be able to go to open mics.
Right. You have to have a clean body and a clean mind. Like you have to be
to write, you know, you need to take time to write.
Strengthening yourself and like working out, like working on your body in order to even like stay in the game. Mm-hmm. And that guy he had multiple failed marriages. I know there's a kid he's not allowed to see anymore. Like just really sad shit has like gone down. And like, of course he's not doing comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I know people that, you know, are on that road, and it's like, it pities me to be like, this is not the, like, there's no not condescending way to, like, tell someone how to live their life. But, you know, like, I want to be like, this is true. Really not the way, dude. Like, you don't want to black out every single night. Like, that's not making you funnier.
I guess a fine line to between condescension and imploring someone to get help. I guess when you stage an intervention, you're not like, this is, although people who get intervened on will find it condescending, but that doesn't mean that it's a condescending act.
Right. I think a drug addiction for a lot of people is inherently narcissistic. It's narcissistic behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think
there's
comedy
elements of it that are selfish.
Comedy also comes from, at least you have to believe in yourself more than the average person.
You have to think you're dope.
You have to think your ideas are novel or interesting. Like something, even if your jokes are hacky and predictable, you got to think you're pretty cool in order to get up on that mic.
Because they got to laugh at something.
They got to, well, it's...
And even if it's your relationship to how you're telling this joke.
Right.
Even if it's not something
Right. But it's, I think to put it on comedy itself, I think is unfair. But it was just really, like, disappointing to find out that he wasn't in a game that I thought I could beat him in. And I mean, effectively I have, but like the fact that he had put his controller down and walked away a long time ago.
So you just ran up the scoreboard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's disappointing, man. And obviously, I mean, I have counterparts, like people that I started with, who'll probably say something similar about me. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, like that guy didn't.
Yeah,
shit.
But
like,
no one, well, sure. But I don't think you're no one's like, oh, he's a meth head in Seattle nowadays.
No. I think I saw myself going down that road, and
really?
There were, I just early in my 20s, I think definitely. Yeah. I think when I first moved to Portland, like 23 to 26,
I call those my wandering years.
Yeah. They were very self-destructive. Really what did it was doing DMT. Like quoting Joe Rogan, but no, I'd had an opportunity. A friend of mine was like, my roommate is a chemist and he's making it. So it's like, I know where it's coming from. It's, it's 6 miles from my apartment. At that point I was like, okay, like this is something I might not have this opportunity. And really it opened my eyes to my self-destructive ways in in a very, very like pronounced sense. Because you can verbalize it, right? It's like, man, I gotta stop drinking. You know, like you can say that out loud, like, oh, I gotta work out, I gotta lose weight, like, oh, I gotta start eating better, I gotta, you know, like, get a better job, or whatever, like, whatever your, you know, if your relationships are bad, it's easy to like identify it, I think, and even to say it out loud, but to actually get your arms around it, I think takes a lot of courage and a lot of sacrifice. And you first, I think, have to admit to yourself that the pattern of decisions that you're engaging with are inherently destructive. And it takes a lot, I think, for any one person to change that. And for some of us, it's a life-changing drug. Others, it's a life-changing sobering.
Because it's not a one-time decision you make and everything changes. It's a series, a permanent in perpetuity, just series of small decisions.
Right. But it gets easier.
Yeah, because it becomes a habit.
Exactly. And for that guy, I think the bad habits just piled up in a way that they didn't for me, you know? Right. And for some people,
so you made a commitment to go the other way with your habits.
Right. Because that, I realized that made me feel, I was chasing power. Like, I didn't feel powerful in my life.
Wow.
And my self-destruction was a way that I felt like I was in control. Because if I can't control myself and my decisions and become successful, then I can get that rush of power from controlling my decisions and becoming unsuccessful and becoming destructive. And that's where, like...
Because at least if I'm unsuccessful, I'm choosing that.
At least I'm the one making these decisions. But I think for a lot of those people...
That is textbook self-destructive.
That is exactly. It's only because I'm so far away from it now that I'm even able to, like, look back and, like, identify this toxicity in my behavior. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't make the choices I was making then today. You know, even like 2 years ago, you know, I felt like I was a dramatically different guy than who I am right now.
So now what is your relationship to success, particularly as it relates to stand-up comedy?
I guess the failures don't land as hard. And that's allowed me to pursue with more intensity and more tenacity. And the effort that you put in, obviously you reap more fruitful rewards, right? So because I'm not as I guess, devastated by the letdowns, it's allowed me to take more chances and more risks and move forward with, you know,
not let the fail, you know, whatever you perceive a failure to be, like, stop you from trying something new.
Right. Like, my muscle recovery has gotten, like, more effective and more, yeah. You know, like it happens at a shorter time frame, mm-hmm. also.
Bounce back faster.
Exactly. And that's really, with anything, like, there's a great quote. I was watching Welcome to Wrexham.
I finally finished it.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. And Rob McElhenney had a quote in there. He's like, I think people who are smart and capable and driven can effectively achieve anything. And I think a lot of people are smart and capable, but I think the drive is where people lose sight of what's important, because it's so discouraging. I mean, you're operating in the face of moment to moment discouragement. Like, mm-hmm. every single second the joke doesn't land, it's like the L is just a punch in the balls.
And you can feel like you could have a good set and feel like you bombed because one joke didn't work out.
God, I drive home with that feeling most nights. But I think it weighs on me less, mm-hmm. because I've had more life experiences. You know, I've just grown as a person through these failures. In some people, they just get beaten down by it. You know, they're not able to bounce back the 50th time or the 100th time. But really, in any one pursuit, like, you're only going to be better off if you bounce back. Like, you might not get everything you want, but you can't tell me that if you bomb for a year and you're applying yourself and you're really trying to change and, like, reshape whatever it is you're doing, that the second year you're going to be bombing just as bad. You know, at the least, you're going to suck less. And that's the most you can ever hope for, is to suck a little bit less every single day. And I think if you can manage to do that, again, you might not become Dave Chappelle, but, like, you're going to have successes that you didn't have before. Inevitably, you are.
And that will ripple out to other facets of your life. Exactly. Inevitably. Exactly. You know, even if you're not Chappelle, it'll still get you opportunities that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise if you hadn't tried, if you hadn't applied yourself.
The least you could do is your absolute most. I feel like that's...
It's one of the four agreements.
Is that one of the four agreements?
Always do your best.
Always? Okay, yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, it's the least you could do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's to give a shit. And, like, not just, like...
It's your life, damn it.
Yeah, man.
Grab it by the horns.
And I guess I'm disappointed in myself for not having... I don't know. Not having treated that guy who I didn't know was in that situation better, right? Like, I didn't have to rub my face in a quite... as much as I did. Mm-hmm. And that's like stuff that I'm really like, my regrets now are not that, you know, I didn't do enough, or, you know, I wasn't, you know, making prudent decisions, but it's like, I wish I hadn't, like, exacted my, you know, state of, like, emotional chaos on this person that was clearly dealing with something that I had no idea they were dealing with.
I guess clearly y'all are both dealing with something, right?
Right. But it's harder
for
me to...
Do you have survivor's guilt?
Yeah, to some extent. Yeah. I have... Yeah. It's... What do you call it when you're done a little... I have thriver's guilt.
Thriver's guilt. I'm guilty for thriving.
Yeah, man. It's... I don't know. It's really... I think that's like the catch-22 of wisdom, right? Is as soon as you figure it out... you realize that it's too late. And it's like, I'm learning that you can't really, like, judge yourself for choices that you didn't know that you could be making better. But at the same time, I could have made better ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're out of the gutter.
I think I'm out of the worst of it.
Yeah. You've been long out of the gutter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've definitely, you know, like, even in the sort of the more difficult situations that I was in since I had, like, the time I was living in LA, like, I feel like I would handle those circumstances better today, but that's only because I had to go through those trials then, you know? But not everyone has that personality, and not everyone is cut out to deal with adversity in that way, you know? And that's, I guess, that's the heartbreaking reality of being a human.
Yeah.
So put that in your four agreements, biatch.
That's the fifth agreement.
That's me. Yeah, I should write a really hostile...
a really hostile four agreements. Four like, agreements. Shut the fuck up. Work
here's
hard.
Here's the first agreement. Shut the fuck up.
The second agreement, make me a fucking sandwich.
Yeah, so I'm single.
Yeah, okay, all right. I do want to talk about this. We're running low on time, but this is...
Well, just have your boy cut around it, whatever.
We got 50 hot minutes.
Yeah, okay.
We got 50 hot minutes, but I really want to conclude this episode talking about the recent event that was your appearance on $100,000 Pyramid with Michael Strahan.
That's right. Yeah.
So what was that like? How did you prepare? Spoiler alert, I'll just go ahead and say, Neeraj won $111,000 on the game show $100,000 Pyramid, which he and I both agree is a show where you can make the most money for doing the least amount of work.
It is a game show where they pay you a lot and you don't need to like know facts. Like, people on Jeopardy...
It's a word association game.
People on Jeopardy study for weeks.
And they're smart.
And they're very bright.
Yeah, they have expansive knowledge on many different subjects. This is just word association. You just have to just
be kind of a thesaurus of all things.
Right.
Really. And, I mean, there were definitely, like... You know.
So just walk us through the process of, so you got messaged by a casting director.
One of the casting assistants messaged me and was like, hey, you know, we're casting for this show. You know, I saw that you're a comedian. You know, I know that you guys do great on camera. Why don't we try it? And it was just a Zoom call where we played the game. And immediately she was like, you're very good at this. And which is something that you and I think knew because we play word association games at like parties and
all
stuff
the time. And we stomped
and
motherfuckers.
We swept like consistently.
We couldn't be on the same team.
Brian, yeah, there were rules made that Brian and I couldn't be on the same team. But it's something
that's you know, and me and my cousin. Like me and Julian whenever we go home.
Not shocked, yeah,
it's,
man.
It's not fair.
Not shocked though. We were mind melded. And this is like peak pandemic. So we'd literally been hanging out with like just each other and like four other people for like 8 months.
Yeah.
But she was like, you know, you're very good at this. And, you know, a few weeks go by, I'm like meeting with different people from the casting team, just playing the game. They're giving me tips. And still this whole time, I'm like, they're not going to put me on this show. Like, I guess I
don't know why you think that.
I hedged my expectations each step of the way because it seems so insane. It is by far the most insane thing that has ever like happened to me. And it was like very little of it was like in my control. You know what I mean?
Welcome to casting.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Exactly. And then there was an application process. I met with the casting director and then it was basically maybe a month before they were like, okay, so this is your shoot date. you know, tentatively, like it's between you and maybe 100 people. But you know, like we'll see what happens.
So block out that date. You have a 1 in 100 chance.
Effectively, yeah. And even then, I was like, okay, they're not gonna get me on the show. You know, like I was preparing for them at some point, because I don't know. I've missed so many auditions. Like maybe a quarter of what
Welcome
I go
to
auditioning. For before. Exactly. So I was just like, okay, this is the business. I was far from getting my hopes up. And then it was like 2 weeks before, and they're like, okay, send us some outfits, and I was like, oh my God, like they're putting me on the show. I get there and I'm because they're like, okay, well, not everybody's gonna go on. We're still making decisions about who's actually gonna play the game.
Wow.
Yeah, so there were people
even
there.
Even when you showed up for that day of filming?
That waited all day and didn't get to go. Oh that traveled thousands of miles that didn't get to go.
Wow.
And like, I was still like, okay, like this isn't gonna happen. And then they walked me on set, and I met Michael Strahan. So I'm already like, oh, I'm fucking, you know, today's a W, you know? Like, I didn't think I was going to win any money. Like, I didn't think I was going to win any money. I was like, all right, this is already cool. You know, I'm going to get on TV, like, have a cool story about it. You know, I'll probably get spanked, and then that'll be the end of it. And then, yeah, like, the first, because there's, like, two sections to the game, right? I win the first section. I win, like, the 11,000. And at that point, I'd already, like, All right, that's it.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Taking home 11 grand. Like, I already felt like a superhero.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, followed through, won $100,000.
And you wanted a celebrity from, because you play with celebrities on the game.
You play with celebrities.
You wanted a Seinfeld celebrity.
So they, so. I explicitly asked them, because they were like, well, you know, what kind of celebrities would you want to play with? And I don't think they were just kind of curious, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think they were making
clearly, because they went the opposite direction.
Right, right. And I was like, oh, I love the show Seinfeld. And like that day of shooting, there was a bunch of, like if you watch the new season, there was a bunch of Seinfeld people on there. And I didn't get paired up with any of them. I got paired up with Bachelor people, a show I
which
have
is
never
the
watched.
Antithesis of Seinfeld.
Yes, it is the anti-Seinfeld. But I think that probably helped, you know, because it's, you know, just
I'm giving my rose to Monica. Monica, take your rose.
God, I love the idea of like Kramer.
Well, Kramer's, you know, the host. I was thinking the same thing, dude. I was thinking the same thing.
Oh man,
ladies, this is your Bachelor.
Oh yeah, so. No, man, it was bizarre. It was by far one of the most bizarre experiences. Like that and like being on drugs, probably like two most bizarre experiences I've ever had in my life.
And just because everyone's going to ask, what are you going to do with the money? Such, what have you done?
Cocaine. No.
And it's gone. I've already snorted the money.
Brian and I are going to Mexico. I'm taking, so, you know, like me and him practiced.
Brian, did I help you or something?
No.
Motherfucker.
So, yeah, I bought the board game from eBay. And, yeah, we played like the classic. It was $25,000 pyramid. I think when
it
was
like the 70s version.
It was like
so
all these
like
old school references. But we just kind of played the game that week. Like it was like a couple days before shooting. There was like another group of friends that I practiced with too. And yeah, I was thought, you know, fuck it. Like you guys helped me win this money. Let's go have fun in Cancun for a weekend. So that's the big trip. We're what now? Like eight weeks away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
First week in December.
Yeah, that's right. Or no, we're five weeks away.
5 weeks away.
We're around the corner.
Wait, eight sounds like a lot.
I've been traveling. So my sense of time has been completely warped.
Amen, sister.
But yeah, just, I think, you know, my talking, trying to be responsible with it. My dad is like, let's buy a house. I was like, fuck it. Let's do it. That's that's a safe, prudent choice because he knows that I'm just going to buy electronics if the money's left alone with me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we'll go have one weekend where we you know, have a good time. And then after that, yeah, just put it to responsible uses. Although on the show, I did say that I would propose to my ex-girlfriend.
I mean, I wasn't going to bring that up.
Which was probably irresponsible because I have a feeling her family also watched that show. And, you know, cursed at the television.
So they you were dating someone at the time.
Right, right. We'd been together, I think, 6 months or so.
Wow.
Give or take. Yeah, because I think we had met.
Enough to talk about it on a game show.
Right. We had met in October and we shot in, what, April. So.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Then you premiered in August?
And it premiered in July. The last weekend of July. Yeah. But by that, we broke up in June, which was unfortunate. But, you know, just awkward timing, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think she saw it?
I know she saw it.
You know she saw it?
Oh, God.
She never messaged you about, like, so when are we having this Indian wedding?
No.
Because you talked about getting an elephant, right?
Yeah. We're not going to do that. We're going to Mexico. Going to Mexico. We're drinking margaritas. Yeah, you know, that's just, you know, life happens, right? Like, you make loose plans and then things kind of shift under your feet and you kind of just got to keep moving forward.
So with that said, what are your future plans? What do you have coming up and where can people find you?
People can find me on Instagram and Twitter. My handle is My Nips Don't Lie. I'm a comic based out of Portland, Oregon. I have a show every Wednesday at Mississippi Pizza and every Thursday at the Pope House Bourbon Lounge. And otherwise, yeah, just keep an eye on my socials. I'll be posting about my stuff on the road. How could I forget? When does this drop?
Let's say it drops. I'm trying to think of when my last episode drops. So let's say it drops either late this week or early next week.
Okay. Well, if you're able to get it out in the next 48 hours.
Okay. If this is time sensitive, I'll get it out in the next 48 hours.
Appreciate you. Yeah. My friend Milan and I are hosting a show at Whammy Analog Video here in LA called Dishoom Dishoom, where it's Mystery Science Theater, but we show clips from Bollywood action movies. And it's been a lot of fun.
And some romantic comedies.
And then some, you know, you get the, it's a Bollywood movie. Bollywoods, you gotta have a little bit of, there's some musical action-packed element in there, know?
Yeah. I've been to a couple of the shows. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So please, please do come check that out. But yeah, I guess that's everything.
Do you want to thank me for having you?
Thanks, Brian. I guess
you're,
I'll say
you're just looking at me.
You,
so I was
you can
like,
tell me you're welcome you're in are. Mexico,
and you're welcome for the training for the pyramid, my friend. Yes. Yeah, cheers,
cheers,
cheers
to that.
Man, thank you so much for doing this. I hope you had a good time.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, from Brian Bogart has a podcast. The podcast. I'm Brian Bogart here with Niraj Srinivasan. Thank you and good night.